his general theory of relativity. Relativity implied that cosmic space is expanding. The idea seemed so outlandish that Einstein himself rejected it, but big new telescopes were being built, and astronomers using them were able to identify individual stars in other galaxies and determine that they obey the same physical laws that pertain here on Earth. In 1929, the American astronomer Edwin Hubble, without knowing that relativity implied that the universe expands, discovered that the distant galaxies are indeed moving apart from one another, just as Einstein's theory had predicted. 4 centuries after Galileo, humans had learned that the universe is all of a piece, expanding and evolving in accordance with one set of physical laws. Living creatures are made of the same stuff as are the stars and planets, and they obey the same laws, and so, in theory, life could exist all over the universe. Message in a bottle. There are more stars in the universe than there are grains of sand at the seashore. Our human desire to communicate runs so deep that we're willing to send messages even though we're not sure who might receive them. Today we have the means to send messages to the planets of other stars, but would anyone be listening? If we are to communicate with the inhabitants of other worlds, there must be creatures out there who have language, radio technology, and the ability to keep transmitting for centuries at a time so that their signals can cross hundreds of light-years of interstellar space. Yet we don't know how we learn to use language or how long we may be willing and able to listen for messages from the stars. If we understood how intelligence arose on Earth, we'd have a better idea of how intelligence arises on other planets. The size of our ancestors' brains more than doubled during the past 2 million years, but nobody knows quite why. Somewhere along the line, about 50,000 years ago, human speech advanced from grunts and warning cries to the use of words as abstractions, capable of probing beyond the realm of immediate experience. In much the same way that prehistoric painters brought the daylit world into the darkness of caves, ancient poets painted word pictures of events remote in space and time. From that point on, evolution began to select not just for brute force and endurance, but for abstract intelligence as well. Nobody knows just when this happened or how. Until we do, it's going to be difficult to estimate how often intelligence may have arisen on other planets. But once our ancestors could make sentences, they could make plans. In hunting and warfare, the balance began to shift from strength to strategy, with strategy tending to win out in the end. As Abraham Lincoln put it, force is all-conquering, but its victories are short-lived. Language is the key to communication. Symbolic language enables us to do mathematics, describe events that happened far away, and make a lasting record of our thoughts and feelings. If we are to communicate with extraterrestrials, they too must be able to manipulate symbols. To search for intelligent life in the universe is, therefore, to search for another species similarly endowed with an aptitude for symbolic language. If they don't have language, they may be smart, but we're not apt to hear from them. Creatures lacking symbolic language cannot send complex messages through space or much of anywhere else. They can cry out in alarm or coo tenderly to their young, but they can't tell someone far away about their planet, their history, or their science. Indeed, without language, they can't have any real history or science. In that sense, looking for intelligent extraterrestrials means looking for beings rather like ourselves. Not that they'd resemble us physically or speak in a human tongue, but they would, by definition, have language. And where there is language, there is hope for translation, and in translation, an end to the long twilight of human loneliness, during which we have known the delights and torments of being uniquely thoughtful, communicative, and self-aware. Is intelligent life merely an accident? Popular accounts of science sometimes say so, claiming that life and intelligence are trivial. One scientist called life a fancy kind of rust afflicting the surfaces of certain lukewarm minor planets. Another portrayed humans as scum, a cosmic afterthought clinging to a small planet in an uncaring universe. But there's a new vision on the horizon, one that sees intelligence as what is called an emergent property, apt to appear on any planet that has a sufficiently complex biological system. The patterns formed by birds in flight and by schools of fish are emergent properties. They can be seen not in individual fish or birds, but only in large assemblages of them. According to this theory, emergent properties can be understood only by studying the system as a whole. The spiral arms of galaxies are fireworks shows created when brilliant young stars are formed by density waves moving across the galactic disk. Millions of stars must be born for the spiral pattern to appear. Weather is an emergent property. A low-pressure front is made of molecules of air and water, but we cannot perceive it just by looking at individual molecules. Only when we consider the system at large does it emerge as a thunderstorm. If intelligence emerges normally in the biospheres of living planets, as naturally as weather patterns emerge in their atmospheres, there may be many thinking beings on other worlds. Science traditionally has concentrated on the parts, the approach known as reductionism. But if intelligence is an emergent property, arising as naturally as clouds gathering to make a storm, then thought may not be incidental to the workings of the universe, but in some sense the point of it all, the central theme in a cosmic symphony. Destiny. There's an Islamic saying that three things are known to no man: the hour of his death, the true name of Allah, and the source of his next meal. In the Jewish tradition, there's the story of a rabbi who's stopped after curfew by a Cossack who says, "Where are you going, old man?" and answers, "I don't know." The Cossack arrests him, and as the door to his cell slams shut, the rabbi says, "You see, I told you I didn't know where I was going." Which is pretty much our situation as members of an intelligent species who don't know if there are any other intelligent beings out there in the universe. We think it's good to be smart, that it bodes well for our destiny, and should for other species, too, in other worlds. But we don't really know where we're going, do we? Does the fact that humans are intelligent mean that we're likely to survive, or will we blow ourselves up or pollute the Earth so badly that we can no longer live here? The physicist Richard Gott has devised a formula for predicting how long the human species is going to last. He begins with the assumption that there's a 95% likelihood that we're living during the middle 95% of humanity's total tenure. To date, Homo sapiens have existed for about 200,000 years. So, says Gott, there's a 95% chance that you're located in the middle 95% of human history, and that, therefore, the future longevity of the human race is likely to be longer than 150 years, but less than 7.8 million years. Now, those numbers are interesting because they give us a total longevity that's quite similar to that of other species. All beings who have learned that the universe is old must also know that by comparison they are young. The longer alien civilizations typically last, the better our chances of communicating with them. Imagine that the lights on a Christmas tree represent technological civilizations that might have arisen in a given galaxy over a given period of, say, 1 million years, and that the length of time that each light stays on represents the period during which each civilization is willing and able to make radio contact with the inhabitants of other such worlds. If the communicative worlds typically stay on the air for 500,000 years, their persistence is rewarded. Each will find that it has plenty of contemporaries with whom to make radio contact. So if civilizations last a long time, SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, is a cinch. But what happens if alien civilizations typically last only 100,000 years before they become extinct or lose interest? Now the blinking bulbs on our Christmas tree blink for a shorter period of time, and we find that there are only a few worlds on the air at any given time. What monuments might they have built to leave some trace of themselves in the annals of cosmic history? Perhaps they long ago established a permanent network to link inhabited planets and preserve a record of their histories. If so, the first signal we receive could come from an interstellar internet. Deployed over eons by robotic spacecraft, such a network could bring libraries of information within relatively close reach of emerging worlds like ours. Communication can bridge time as well as space, revealing the histories of societies that disappeared long ago and offering clues to how our species might best navigate its way toward the dim and distant future. We don't know how many alien civilizations exist or how long they typically last, or how many of them take the trouble to broadcast signals. What if everybody's listening and nobody's sending? Scientists involved in SETI seldom transmit anything, either because they'd have to wait decades or centuries to get an answer, or out of fear of betraying our presence to aliens who might, for all we know, be hostile toward us. But what if someday we want to send a message, a powerful message, beamed to a planet where we had some reason to expect that there was someone listening? What would we say? The astrophysicist Franz Cordova would ask, "I want to know if they're bad guys or good guys. If they're good, we can work with them, right?" The physicist Paul Horowitz would send this message, "Dear extraterrestrial, please respond to this message by sending a radio signal back on the frequency at which you receive this message, making due allowance, of course, for your motions around your star. Send that signal at a power level such that it arrives on Earth with at least 10 to the minus 23rd watts per square meter, and leave your transmitter running long enough, let's say a few months, so that one of the searches now operating on Earth will receive it. Then we can really get a conversation going." The physicist Freeman Dyson would say,
"Please forgive us for making so much noise. You know, but talking is what we do all the time, and maybe the reason we don't hear the aliens is because they are different, and they keep quiet."
The paleontologist Stephen Jay Gould says,
"What I want to know from you is, what's your biochemistry? I really want to know whether life has to be done through DNA or whether there are lots of other ways, and I need another experiment to find out. And the other thing, I will give to you the B minor mass, because that's the best thing we've ever done. But I'd like to know whether you've ever done anything that beautiful, and if so, what was it, and share it with us."
Physicist Richard Gott's message is,
"Our intelligent species has been around for 200,000 years, and we have sent members of our species to our neighboring moon. And we've learned something of the laws of physics, and we've learned where we are in the universe. How are you doing?"
My message to the aliens goes as follows. "Greetings from one of the species that inhabit Earth, a blue planet orbiting an average star. We call ourselves Homo sapiens, by which we mean that we are capable of mathematics, science, and the technology by which this message is being sent. We're the only such creatures on this world, and so far as we know, the only ones to have lived here throughout its long history. Science has brought a better life for millions of us, but many more of us still live in poverty, tyranny, and ignorance. Sometimes we wonder if there is intelligent life on Earth. We've only just glimpsed the vastness of time and space and of our own ignorance. We've learned that we have a lot to learn. And so we're dispatching this message in hopes of learning something about you and about ourselves. We request the favor of a reply."
Copyright New Millennium Audio 2000, a division of NM World Media, Inc.